Hello, friends. Welcome to another program of Two Guys with Heart, with Giff Briner and Dave Colonen. These two fine Christian gentlemen will do their very best to bring encouragement to your faith. We all undergo difficulties throughout our lifetime. How do we respond, and what is the correct direction that we should take? Giff and Dave will give it their best shot to guide our lives through the work and words of Jesus. And now, here they are, Two Guys with Heart.
Good afternoon, friends. Hey, it's Giff Briner here, another exciting program of Two Guys with Heart. Me and my very good friend,
Dave Colonna.
Dave and I are going to do our very best to enlighten your heart and your soul to help you live a more godly life. That's our ambition. The last couple of weeks, we've been talking about the three chairs of Christianity. First chair, second chair, third chair. And we've gotten many comments from our listeners and asking for more additional information. And, you know, we're going to talk about that immensely in a large quantity today. Last time we were together, we talked a lot about the first chair people. Today, we're going to talk about second chair and third chair people. But before we do that, Dave, not all of our listeners heard us speak recently. And even those who did might want a little refresher. Would you mind taking a moment, please, to tell us what those three chairs constitute?
Sure. It's just a look at real different to catch your attention, to know that there are chairs invisible that we sit in. We have a first chair. Everybody wants to sit in the first chair, but don't know how to get there and don't know what to do when they do get there. So we start with the... We told you a lot about the first chair people who go to church and really serve God with all their life. And then there's the second chair people. They go to church, but they don't get excited about it too much, and they just happy to get out and go home and forget it till next Sunday. And then we have the third chair. That's usually our children. And sometimes we don't teach our children properly, and they don't know anything about the church. They don't know about how we got there as parents. They don't know how we do things in the first chair. And it's a struggle to find out a family who sits in all three chairs, different members of the family. And so we want to each day deal with a different chair so that you can understand what chair you sit in. We'll tell you. You won't have to. We won't have to tell you. We don't even know where you live, but you'll be able to tell by our program, what chair do I sit in? And we're praying that God will help you to move up, because you maybe sit in the second or third chair, and you need to be in the first chair. So we can do that, and let's talk about second chair people. First chair.
All right.
First chair. Love people. Second chair, love possessions.
That's good. That's very good.
I'm going to let you deal with that for a minute.
Okay. I like your description of the first chair people. They are people-oriented, and they care immensely about others. That's what Jesus spent his entire ministry, serving other people. And we talked a great deal about that recently, of how first chair people really love their fellow man. But we're going to look at second chair people today. And second chair people are those who put their focus on material things, on possessions, on things that they can look at, hold, talk about, not necessarily get personal with. The majority of believers sit in the chair of compromise. They're making other people take the back seat. They do not love, and they will not serve, or they don't pray. They don't pray for other people on a regular basis. Something else always takes priority, and that something soon determines everything in that person's life. If you scored strongly in a self-evaluation where you were judging yourself, you might read carefully over those pieces where it put you into the second chair. You'll probably experience moments of affirmation about some of the hard decisions that you have to make to move from chair two to chair one. And anyway, the idea is that you have to move from one level to the next, and hopefully everyone will be moving into the first chair. If, on the other hand, you don't do so well when you try to do a self-evaluation, you might come face-to-face with some giants, mountains and valleys in your life, peaks and very high things to try to climb over to get it out of it, or valleys where you sink so low that you're wondering if I can go anyplace. Giants are powerful and painful to deal with, but they also can be defeated. Hey, it takes a commitment in the Lord Jesus. It is also possible for you to find liberty, freedom, fulfillment, and joy, and stay in that second chair. But it won't be easy. You see, if a believer has a life that is not filled with love for other people or service to other people and praying for other people, what is it filled with? You see, each of us have a purpose. We consciously or subconsciously work on that purpose. Whatever that purpose is, we will find it appealing because life must be full of something. The more appealing something is to us, the more passionate and focused we are about it, and the more we dedicate our thoughts and times and our energy to attain it. Could that be things or people? There are many options for the person who doesn't choose to pursue and serve the Lord and the Lord's people, but nearly anything else you choose to fill your life with can fit into one of four categories. Let me go over those four categories. I've listed them right here in front of me. Desire to acquire possessions. Getting or saving great amounts. Does that mean a lot to you? How about number two on my list here? Desire for personal pleasure. Enjoying leisures or sensualities. You have an overwhelming desire to be swimming all the time? How about number three on my list? A desire for power and prestige. Controlling and being in charge. Are you obsessed with a leadership role that makes you very powerful over those other people around you? Or number four on my list is a desire to serve people, serving the needs of others. Now, where are your desires? Desires to acquire possessions, desires for personal pleasure, desires for power and prestige, or a desire to serve people. You put yourself into the category. I and Dave won't do it for you. You have to do it for yourself. Think about everyone you know, your family, your close friends, your people at church, the people you work with, your sports teammates, how about your neighbors, and others who you come in contact. What percentage of them would you put into these four categories? Turn on your television and watch the advertisements. What values are promoted the most often? You see, everybody fits into one of those four categories. A personal desire is desire to acquire possessions, personal pleasure, power and prestige, or serving other people. Where do you belong? Where do all these people belong? Where do you want to move to? David, I think that we've probably over-described those options for people to consider. And all too often, we have to swallow hard and say, hey, you know something? Maybe there's some chair one in me, but maybe there's some chair two in me also. Where do you draw the line, Dave? Do you have any idea what our listeners are looking for at this point? Because we all want to have a little some kind of possessions. We drive a nice car. You know, let's face it, we could drive a car that's 30 years old if we were so inclined that, you know, it just barely passed inspection or something like that. But we have nicer cars, don't we? And we have nice homes. We don't live in a little cardboard box. So, yeah, we do like some possessions. Where do we know where to draw the line between earthly possessions as a chair two person might seek or those compared to a chair one person who praises the people that the good old Lord has put on this earth to interact with us? Where do you draw the line?
That's a funny thing. You have your choice to sit in which chair. I noticed that summertime people buy an RV you don't see them in church because Sunday morning is a great time to go to the camp or to the beach. And so if when I hear people saying, hey, we just bought an RV, I say to myself, they just moved to the second chair.
Yeah, that's right. I never thought
because
of that.
They're not. There's only church Sunday morning. We don't have church Sunday night anymore. And when Wednesday we have study classes, and people that don't sit in the first chair probably don't go on Wednesday night.
Right.
And so you see, you can decide where you fit and how much of your life are you going to give to God.
Yeah,
we're here on earth to do His bidding. The best thing you can do for a person is to lead them to Jesus and to tell them how to live right. He's coming again. The Bible says He's coming again. And, a bunch of us are going to go in the rapture. And if you miss the rapture, you're not going. And you're going to live a terrible end of your life for millions of years. So we want you to move from... I don't want you to sell your RV, but you got to be willing to say, you know, that when you go there, you got to take your RV to the find the church instead of the beach and go there first.
Yeah.
And keep in touch with God and God's people. We have desires that we live with. We have to look at the three chairs often to say, am I in the right chair? We have a desire for pleasure. We have a desire to acquire possessions. We have a desire for prestige, and we have a desire to serve some people. And as we live our life, all four of these things, how we handle them, boy, the people that are listening today are saying that, you know, I hadn't even thought of that. I didn't know there was a chair for me to sit in that was a righteous chair or an ungodly chair. The third chair, they don't even know about God. They don't have a Bible. They don't own one. They don't want to read it anyway. And the second chair people, they have a Bible. They take it to church. They probably don't read it either, but maybe a line or two a year. Who knows? First people, they bring their notebook, and they're taking notes on the message, and they're writing down the scriptures, and it's, you can just look over your church and find out what kind of a church you're going to. And that's going to be important. The three chairs are something that Giff and I are enjoying ourselves. We find material that we like, and it impresses us, and we say, boy, you know, if this comes into our life and we are fascinated with it, then surely people who listen, they're going to be...
Yeah.
And the Spirit of God has His way through this microphone. I believe that. And it's going to hundreds and maybe thousands of homes and cars, and people are just turning away and saying, wow. And you think about that the rest of the day.
And it'll stick with them. Dave, you made a powerful point there. I liked your example of the Bible. That is probably the best example I can think of in the difference between a chair two and chair three person. You know, chair two person owns the Bible. But, you know, you can belong to a gym. That doesn't make you an athlete. You have to go to the gym. It's the same with the Bible. You might own a Bible.
You got
to
read it.
But you have to read it. Yes. You know, you wouldn't want to become a Christian. Now, maybe chair one people, they don't even own the Bible. Or perhaps they do, but they don't even dust it off. It just gathers dust for them. Well, that's not doing them any good either. You might as well not even belong to the gym if you're not going to at least drive by it. So that's probably a pretty good illustration. If you're going to read and study your Bible, that automatically moves you into a chair one person because you care about other people. That's what the ministry of Jesus was all about, caring for people. Chair two people, their top priority is possessions. What can they accumulate? Where can they go? What can they visit? Who can they control? That's not where my priorities lie. I want to live a good life. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah,
but it can't be my top priority.
We're talking about people spending their money to buy the wrong thing that it takes
them
out of the church.
That's right.
Solomon was a very rich man, maybe the richest on earth.
Yeah.
And what did he do with his life? Solomon had 40,000 stalls for horses for his chariots and 12,000 horsemen. And you read in the Bible, Solomon had horses imported from Egypt and exported them to all the kings of the land and the kings of Syria. Solomon sinned by importing the very things God told him not to from the very place God had told him not to in Egypt. He then complicated the sin by selling them to his nation's enemies. It wasn't that God didn't like horses. He didn't want the king to put building a vast army ahead of himself. Was Solomon compelled to do this because he was just a horse lover? Probably not. The problem was that Solomon set out to get the things God promised him his own way. Solomon is another person that we could talk about for days about what did he do sitting in those chairs, and did he move from day to day? Get up in the morning, by the nightfall, he had moved down a chair or two, and he had to examine himself and say, we better look at this again for tomorrow. Well, how am I going to wake up? What chair am I going to be in?
Yes.
Maybe that's still in our day. 2,000 years later, we're still thinking about that.
Yes. Solomon sinned by marrying a woman from the nations Israel was commanded to destroy. Remember studying that? Well, what does that make him? Then he complicated that sin by worshiping the god of his foreign wives. Oh, my goodness. If he's worshiping the wrong god because of a foreign wife, now he's really compounding. He's moving down a chair level. He's already in chair three. And by building temples in high places so that his wives could worship their idols, Solomon sinned again and again and again. The greatest man, smartest man, richest man had his priorities messed up for a while, did he not? Solomon also sinned by enticing the entire nation of Israel to follow his example in idolatrous worship. Hey, where the leader goes, the people will follow, right? He forsook the Lord for the gods of his enemies. Again, what motivation did God have for giving him a clear direction about wives? And what motive did Solomon have by disobeying the Lord? Did Solomon have 300 wives because he thought it was the right thing to do? No. Or was he seeking pleasure? What do you think? Before you offer an answer, note that Solomon was also warned not to multiply silver and gold. 2 Chronicles chapter 9 says things like that. The weight of gold that came to Solomon yearly was something like 660 talons of gold. Wow, that'd be about $4 billion in today's standards. What do you think was behind God's clear instructions about wealth? And what desire in Solomon was driving him into this hoard of possessions?
I think the pivotal word there is, what do you love? What you have is revealed by the choices you make. Either you love the world and the things of the world, or you love the Father and the things of the Father. John describes the three main desires that all men and women deal with. How do these things hit you? Power, pleasure, possessions. How do those things relate? These same three issues have been tempting us since the Garden of Eden. The serpent offered wisdom and tasty food and pleasing fruit. They were even the same source of temptation that Satan threw at Jesus when he was in the wilderness. The devil offered him food, bread, wealth, possessions of the kingdom of the world. He offered Jesus power, the kingdom of this world, without the pain of the cross. Christ would have to disobey his Father. So the Lord said, no, no. He loved his Father. He knew that the love of the Father is in direct opposition to the love of the world. Do you see how it's categorized, the longings for this world that's in us? And we have to guide all the things that we do. We have to guard our the lust of the flesh. We have the lust of the eyes, the pride of life.
Yeah.
You can go on all that.
That's right.
And deal with other things that bug the family.
All the don'ts, the do's and the don'ts. Don't multiply your wives. Don't multiply your wealth. Don't multiply your horses. Well, that's what you just told us about Solomon. And, well, those are do's and don'ts. You're good for food. That's a pleasure. The pleasantness for the eyes, that's the possession. And a desire to make one wise, well, that's power, isn't it? Make stones become bread, that's a pleasure. Giving the kingdom and their glories, okay, that's possession. And throwing yourself around, well, that's his power. So all of these things are kind of related to these three chairs. We're trying to draw you a picture so you can put yourself where you think you should be. Behind all of these options is love. What do you love? You see, that's what it's all about. Solomon had been told not to love other things, not to multiply for yourself, but he disobeyed because he loved the things of the world.
That's the problem of sitting in the second chair, Kiff.
Yeah.
Because the devil brings all that stuff, and if you didn't choose the Lord totally, you choose something else. And when you choose something else, you automatically do not choose the Lord. And you'll make a choice for pleasure, for possessions, for power, for any combination of them. Your choice will seem normal, but it will even seem logical. But those choices will lead to further choices, all going in the wrong direction. The pull of the world is tough. You know that. The pull of the world is emptying the church these days. People don't want to sit in the first chair anymore. They want to get out of the church. They only want to go once a year on Easter or Christmas. Yeah. And we don't need that. We don't need that anymore. It hasn't helped us so far. We still live in sin. So second chair does not have the commitment to God.
That's right.
And
that's the key. The commitment is not there.
Maybe that's what we're all about today.
Yes. Well, let's take a look, before we run out of time, let's take a look at that third chair. You know, you just said something there that really clicked with me, Dave. You know, the people that want to go to church on Christmas and Easter. I remember as a young man, when I went to church Christmas Sunday and Easter Sunday, their church was absolutely packed. It's not true anymore.
Even on the special days?
Special days, those people quit coming completely. What happened, Dave? Where did we go wrong?
Well, I think anytime you stay away from the church 3 or 4 weeks, and then the devil looks around and sees who he can devour, and your name comes up. They haven't been church in 3 or 4 weeks. They're vulnerable.
Gone.
Ah, oh, what a tough way to live.
Yes, it is. Dave, we're going to run out of time here quickly. I want to just mention these third chair people because it's very difficult for us to bring those people around. They don't particularly appreciate their shortcoming.
They have no purpose.
They have no direction.
Yeah, they have no purpose.
Yep, they don't know where they're headed. They have no goals, no ambition, no love for mankind.
They're loners.
They're loners.
They're loners.
By themselves out there in the middle of no place. What can we do for these people who have no love or no direction and could care less? Is there anything we can do for them?
We got to start back at the children. You got to raise your children and get them out of the third chair and get them in, get them up to where they're doing things right.
Oh, I like the way you're thinking.
Children, they disobey their parents. They don't live love for their parents. But we need to tackle the youth department of the world. If they're struggling.
If the people are not taking their children to church, what chance do those children have?
They don't have
any. They have very little chance.
Yes.
I agree with you. I hope that's the lessons learned. David, we've exhausted our time. The engineers are over here waving at us. Linda Kathy's trying to tell us to cut it off. So we have to say goodbye. I certainly appreciate Jeremy and Kathy, our engineers, are helping us today. We thank you for your efforts. But for now, we must say goodbye. Gift Writer saying so long.
Dave Colonna here. I'm at a good time today talking to you. See you next time. Bye-bye.